phone.
Okay. So I hope everybody can see my screen over here. What I want to do today is actually I just want to wrap up our entire discussion of Davar HaAved. You'll see I have a few ha'aros that are lingering from our past discussions. But mostly I want to follow up on our discussion of the different remedies for breach of contract in the case of Davar HaAved and the hierarchy between those remedies. So let me just make one ha'ara that's overdue. So if you look back to the Shitos of the Rishonim that talked about liability arising mitam arev, so I mentioned this very briefly. I just found a better quote from the Pesachei Choshen, so I'm going to go back to page 55 in the source sheet here. You might expect, and I think this makes a lot of sense, that if liability arises under a theory of arev, which is this idea that the poel implicitly is agreeing to be mischayiv himself to indemnify the balabayas from losses, I think it's very reasonable to assume that the poel would have to know that he's being employed for a davar ha'aved. Because a necessary condition of his voluntary hischayvus, you might argue, is that he's aware that he may be on the hook, and that requires that he be aware that he's being employed for a davar ha'aved. So you can see the Pesachei Choshen, I think, is very clear about that. You'll remember the Ramban that we saw in the last Chabura explicitly said, or the Ramban at least implied, that the liability is mitam are voluntary hischayvus. And here's the quote from the Pesachei Choshen. Mikomakom nir al pi divrei haRamban, shelo chiyuvo poel bedavar ha'avod, ela kishe bishas schirus yada ha'poel sheniskar ledavar ha'avod. V'aldas kein shibud atzmo. You could only trigger liability mitam arev if the poel knew that he was being hired for a davar ha'avod, and aldas kein shibud atzmo. Aval im sachar l'stam melacha, o shehischi b'melacha acheres v'yachar kach nas on the davar ha'avod, mistaver she'ein din poel b'davar ha'avod, she'ein dino ke poel b'davar ha'avod, shelo shibud atzmo aldas kein. If you didn't tell him that he was being hired for a davar ha'avod, or you employed him for some other work and then assigned him to a davar ha'avod material, he wouldn't have liability mitam arev because he never really had the opportunity to be mischayiv himself because he didn't know that he was going to be assigned that kind of work. So I think that's just like a very nice suggestion given the nature of liability mitam arev. So that's one outstanding ha'ara that I wanted to make. Now this brings us back to our discussion from last couple. Yeah, Noah.
I have a question. How does that fit into our whole discussion about a poel who leaves his tools in the Rishut of the Baal Bayim? Because it seems that all the Mahalachim would say that there's no requirement of explicit dot of the poel that it's Davar HaAvod.
Yeah, well,
I think in terms of his Cheskat Mamon approach, I don't think it would require it.
It's interesting. So I think you might argue that one of the theories of leaving your Dmei HaChavila in the Rishus is a theory of Kinyan. So then under Kinyan, maybe you don't need explicit das that it's Davar HaAvod. But under the regular understanding that the Hischaivos is Mitam Arev, so if you think that when you give the Dmei HaChavila, there's an implicit Hischaivos that in a Davar HaAvod, you're willing to hold yourself liable up to the value of the Chavila, then I think the Pesachei Choshen might be right that you would have to concede that the Poel needs the state of mind awareness that he was employed for that. So I think even in the Dmei HaChavila case, the Pesachei Choshen's observation might be true. All right? Okay. So the last thing we mentioned on Thursday was really we outlined four different remedies for breach in Davar HaAvod. So there's the two outlined in our sugya, Sochar Alein Umatan, and even between those two we saw a hierarchy. We saw that the tour thought you have a duty to first attempt to be matan before you do sochar alehen, and I argued that that's because matan is more consistent with the primary obligation under the contract. The contract is to get the job done. If you could just convince this worker, persuade him, or even deceive him into getting the job done, that's fully consistent with the primary obligations of the contract. Sochar alehen is a little more removed. It's more of a secondary remedy. Because it requires hiring a new worker to complete the job instead or in place of the worker who breached. The third kind of remedy that we saw is the remedy of kfias bezdin, or at least kfia. We weren't 100% sure if it had to be kfias bezdin. And we saw that this could cut both ways in terms of the hierarchy. In terms of just getting the contract done, it seems like it should be a primary remedy, right? The worker had a duty to get the job done. Now the Bezdin's going to force him to do so. So you might think it's a primary remedy in terms of how consistent it is with the fundamental obligations of the contract. But then we saw, well, maybe there's a counter argument to say that it infringes too much on the worker's liberty. You never want to compel. Maybe there's a presumption against compelling performance, and that should demote it to like a secondary or a remedy of last resort. And we saw that was a tension in the different achronim who discussed the kfiyas bezdin. The fourth remedy that we've seen is really the most different from the other three, and that's the remedy ex post facto of whether the worker who breaches could be liable for the nezek losses that the balabayas suffers as a result of the breach. And the reason why the nezek liability is just different is because the other remedies are about getting performance done, about securing the completion of the contract, whether it's through deceiving the worker, whether it's through hiring new workers, whether it's through coercing the worker. Tashlumei Nezikin is really different because it's not a remedy ex ante. It's not a remedy about getting the job done. It's a remedy of what happens in case the job couldn't get done. What liability does the poel have? And so here we saw Machlokes Rishonim. We saw the Ramban and the Nemukei Yosef seem to say, they do say, that if the Baal HaBayis was not able to be Socher Aleihen and he was Mafsid Baham Tanasam, Einam Mishalmin, the workers are not liable to pay Nezek. And the Ramban said the same thing, Einam Mishalmin. The only liability they have is to cover the costs of completing the job, L'chatchila, hiring new workers to complete it. But they're not going to be Chayiv in Ezekin ex post facto. And presumably, the reason for that is that their liability under the contract is really to perform, to complete the job. And this kind of ex post facto nezek would be a kind of grumma, which they wouldn't be liable for. We saw the Ritva disagreed. The Ritva
Why wouldn't it just be reliance?
Mean that he lost by relying on them?
Right, exactly. It would seem like
so if you go
in, views are all expectation interest. This is reliance.
So if you go for some sort of theory of Arev, maybe you could get Arev out of it. You could get liability out of a theory of Arev. But we'll see that the Ritva and those Rishonim, or at least the Ramban.
And the Ritva's wicked. The Ritva's wicked confused about this whole thing. He goes in like three different directions at once.
Yeah, you'll see. You'll see. I think my view here is that a lot of Achronim arguably are confused about these distinctions, and we'll see that actually today. But I think the short answer to your question, Cole, is if the liability is mitam arev, then you'll see that some Rishonim are going to cap it at whatever they assume to be the amount that the poel was willing to be mischayev himself for. So, for example, the Ramban, let me just give you this one. The Ramban,
that whole line didn't make any sense to me in the Rishonim.
Right.
Seems completely arbitrary.
Yeah. So, for example, so the Ritva, for example, says, oh, there's going to be chayiv for hefsin. There's going to be liability for nezikin ex post facto for hefsin mamon. Mishtali mehen kedei scharan, o kedei achavila shebasal yado. So on the one hand, the Ritva talks about there being nezek ex post facto, but he thinks the liability is capped at the value of the contract of the workers who breached. So I think that's a cool. That's what you're pointing out, right? It just makes a cholent out of these two different concepts. It's not. It sounds like it's not liability mitam nezikin. It's liability ex post facto, mitam, the hischaivus, or the obligation that they have to pay for you to get the job done. And we pointed out last time.
Basically, the idea is that the Baal HaBayis, I assume the idea, the best spin you could put on this is that, like, the Baal HaBayis committed, when he made the contract with the workers, one of the things he was doing, the Rishonim, this is a theme that the Rishonim used, like, a particular amount that's, you know, agreed upon in a particular context in some other context. The duty to mitigate, in a sense, is the same idea. The idea is that the Baal HaBayis, when he said, "I'll pay you $10 to do this," well, that was the amount that it was worth the Baal HaBayis to get this thing done. So that should also be the ceiling on liability for the worker in case it doesn't get done.
But notice, Cole, that this is all mitam, some sort of hischaivus, right? It's not just based off the pure principles of nezek. It's not like, oh, he damaged you up to this amount, so he's liable that amount. They're saying, he's saying the ex post facto nezek liability is going to be capped at the hischaivus amount. So you see, so he's mixing those two things together. I see we have a hand from Adam.
Yeah, go back to the Ramban and Mukhi Yosef. Is it clear that they're necessarily talking about cases of nezek Or is it just pure financial, pure just they need to make up the cost of whatever they would have been mechayev, that which was not done?
I think im lo sachar lein ela hifsid b'ham tanasim. I think it means he really lost out because of what the poel didn't perform.
What's the literal translation of hefsid b'ham tanasim?
I think he lost by their delay, by their non-showing up.
Lost by their...
So the idea is that I have flax that's soaking and needs to be picked right away, and the guy didn't show up on time, so I lost the flax because I lost the flax spoiled because they didn't show up.
Later, I think you see that the understanding of Hesed Behemnatan is not necessarily, that doesn't necessarily imply a loss of Mammon.
Yeah, right. Like the Ritva is two categories. Yeah. Right. I would assume here that he's talking about there is monetary. The Ramban and the Nukosif are saying there is monetary loss, and Afal Pichin there's no liability, right? Or for the Ritva there's liability, but capped at Ad Kedei Scharan. Let me just point out. I see Eitan has a hand, so we'll take Eitan in a second. Just two other shitas. The Pisrei Choshen here quotes the Chazon Ish. I looked up the Chazon Ish. He says the same thing. It's just the Chazon Ish I don't have on Bar Ilan, so it's harder to type up word for word. So he says, Ayin Chazon Ish, Sheherech Lochiach, Shedas, second guys. Sheherech Lochiach, Shedas Rov Rishon Lava, Viafilu Behefsin Mamon, Ein Apolim Chayavin El Kishir Shekavu Chazal. So this is the Chazon Ish endorsing that position of the Ritva, that even when there's real monetary loss, the liability is going to be capped at Ad Kedei Schara. And that's what he means by the Shir Shekavu Chazal. So it's not full damages for the full amount of the loss. It's just qualified, or it's limited by the amount that Chazal say. It's interesting that he calls it a Shir Shekavu Chazal. The Rishonim all refer to like a Hischaivus. The Chazon Ish seems to think that Ad Kedei Schara and Ad Kedei Chamila is like a liability cap imposed by Chazal. But we'll talk more about that later. Then we saw the Hagos Ashri. The Hagos Ashri was the first Shita, really, in Perek Vav Siman Beis, who said that if there is, if you caused a loss, Chayav L'Shalim Kol Hefseda Mishum Dina D'Garmi. So he's the first one to say that in breach of contract cases, that could fully trigger liability for the full amount of the loss up until the, up to the full value of the Hefsed. So there's real Chiyav Nezikin here. Now, it's a bit of an interesting question in the Hagos Ashri whether he thinks this is a special form of Nezek that comes about through breach of contract, or whether he just thinks this is like a standard principle of Nezek that you could be chayev for these losses. But Al-Kolpanim, the Hagos Ashri is the first Rishon to say that the principles of Nezikin would go into effect to hold the poel liable for the full value of the damages. Okay, so those are the shitas that we saw in the Rishonim. Eitan, let me take your question now.
If you recall last week, I wanted to suggest that perhaps this whole issue might be Nezek, and you wanted to push back on the fact to call this issue of Dabar Aved and Mitam Arev in general an issue of Nezek, and right. I think that's exactly, like, what the Ritva is saying is exactly what you were trying to push back on, because you felt that this was, like, combining too many ideas, and they actually should be distilled. So I actually think that we spoke about this, last Tuesday already. But it is interesting that someone actually puts it in writing.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
I think you're right, Eitan.
Just like theoretically talking about it out loud.
Yeah, I think you're right. We'll see this also in some of the other sources that we're going to discuss in a few minutes, that it seems like a bunch of these achronim try to actually interpret damages in the contract as damages mitam nezek, meaning also failing to make the distinction that I'm so insistent on making.
Yeah.
So we'll see that actually very explicit in the Nesivis, and yeah, 100%. Good. Okay. So I want to take a closer look at the relationship now between these different remedies. So we saw a little bit about this hierarchy question in the distinction between Sochar Lein and Matan, the distinction between Sochar Lein and Matan on the one hand, and Kofinoso Balkarcho to finish the job. But now I want to take a closer look at the hierarchy between these remedies with respect to the distinction between liability mitam nezek, ex post facto, holding the workers liable for the balabais's losses, and liability and the remedies of sochar leinu matan. So if you look here at the Nesivis in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel Sifkatan Yedalid, did anybody get a chance to see this Nesivis? I think I added it yesterday to the Makoro sheet, so I added it pretty late. But did anybody have a chance to see the Nesivis yet? No? If you did, feel free to shout out.
Yeah.
Who's that? Adam, you saw it?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting Nesivis. Do you know what his quad he's bothered by?
The issue that theoretically, in certain cases, right, you're not, right, by case of Dabar Abed, which were significant Nezek. So theoretically, we don't want you to hire someone else for more than what you're going to be paying this guy.
Exactly, meaning we saw the Shulchan Aruch Paskin that in Sochar Aleihen, if you're hiring a new worker to finish the job, you could only impose up to the value of the breacher's contract on the breacher, right?
Yeah.
So the remedy of Sochar Aleihen is capped at the full value of the contract of the breaching party. That's the extent of his liability. But the Ramah Paskins, in addition, what else is the Ramah Paskin, which creates the problem?
I mean, in terms of Nezek, after the fact, any loss that was caused, you're kind of up to the full amount.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, right? So he says that the Ramah seems to paskin the Hagos Ashri. Remember we saw this over here, and Ben made a really interesting observation on the WhatsApp group, which we should talk about. But the Ramah seems to paskin the Hagos Ashri. He's citing the Chumash Hadeshin b'shem the Hagos Ashri, that if it's a Davar Avud Shal Mamon, Sarach L'Shalim Lo Kol Hazeko. So the Nesivis thinks that there's a stira here. He says it just seems so strange that liability mitam nezek for ex post facto damages, the worker could be on the hook ad kedei the value of the damage, but for sochar aleihen, his liability is capped at dmei haschiros, right? Mashma, this is the Nesivis and Shin Lamed Gimel Yudalid. Mashma devedaver ha'avid shel mamon after chayiv l'shalim kol ha'hezek mikom lakom eino sochar aleihen rak kedei scharan shel. And if it's b'chavila yado, it's capped at the value of the chavila. V'hu tamua ma'od, says the Nesivis. Kivan de im yufsad hapoalim trichin l'shalim kol ahefsin midina de garmi, vaday de yachol liskar aleihen ad mem benun zuz kedei lahatzil mehahefsid. He says if you're able to collect ex post facto damages ad kedei de meha nezek, you should be able to be sochar aleihen also up to that amount. Why should there be a distinction in terms of the liability cap for these different remedies? So what do you guys think of that question of the Nesivis? Anybody?
It's okay.
Who's that? Was that cool?
It's like, I guess the idea is that you can, look, there's a, I mean, here's what might be behind it. So ideally, the you want to find. I imagine the Nesivis is operating with the following goal in mind. Ideally, you want to find a remedy that's as close as possible to the actual performance of the contract on the part of the workers. So the best thing to do, if you can't get these workers to do the job, is to get somebody else to do the job. If you're going to get somebody else to do the job, then it probably makes sense that the liability for the workers be limited to just the amount that they would have received to do the job. If you can't get somebody else to do the job and you're going to suffer the loss, then it makes sense to unlimit the liability of the workers to, you know, for the, you know, to, so that the balabais gets comps for whatever it is, you know, the amount that the product would have been worth market or something like that. But all of this is tending towards the, you could, you know, view it from, you know, one of three perspectives. Either the Nesivis is looking to, you know, limit the liability of the workers or to impose burdens on the balabais, given what he already agreed to get the thing done in the most cost-effective way. Or the idea is that there's some kind of, like, you know, imminent rationality in the contract that it is best fulfilled in a way that, you know, resembles the way it ought to be fulfilled, namely by the workers performing. And so, you know, all the remedies get, like, adequated to that ideal method of fulfillment.
But I want to point out that the Nesivis actually, and I'll take Yoni's hand, the Nesivis actually goes the other way in his answer. He actually says that L'chein Nireh, that in a case of Davar HaAved, where ex post facto you'd be chayiv for all the damages mitam dina de garmi, you could also be socher alehen ad kidei she'inasu apol mehahezek. So he actually says that if it's the kind of case where ex post facto the worker would be liable for kol hanezek mitam garmi, then in those cases it'll also be true that you could be socher alehen ad kidei the value of the nezek that they would have to pay b'di'eved. So
yeah, I'm not sure I understand. So when would the liability of the workers be limited to the just the amount that they would
only
have
in
paid?
Those cases where the nezek is not greater than the socher alein umatan value,
I don't think there will ever be such a case.
Well, let's see. Let's take Yoni's
hand. That case is an empty set. How in the world? I mean, unless the Balabais is really an idiot, how in the world? Because, I mean, but seriously.
Well, hold off. Yeah, hold off. Let's take Yoni's hand, then we'll come back. Yoni. Okay.
I'm not sure what the end of the Nesivo, so I think he's trying to push us in a different direction a little bit there. But at least for the question, like, you're trying to explain the Ramah on his own ground, it seems that the Ramah would be Mechalik, that the Socher Alein Umatan is perhaps a form of contract remedy, right? And therefore, that's why it's capped, because with regard to their contract liabilities, there's only a certain amount that they are obligated. And then the later remedies of, if there is hezek, then how much they have to pay, that's midin garmi, that's not midin contract. So that's why there's a different amount. You can ask, like, oh, shouldn't you be able to contract out? That's not how, like, Nizvi can work. You can't necessarily contract out in advance.
I agree 1,000%.
For losses.
I think that's exactly right. So the Nesivis is bothered by how could the remedy for Nezikin be different from the remedy for Socher Alehen? And I think the answer is exactly as Yoni said. The reason why they're different is because they're very different principles. The remedy for Socher Alehen is a remedy within contracts, right? And so it's going to be capped at the value of the contract. The remedy of Nezikin is a totally different principle in halacha. It's a different mesechta. It's a bava kama issue. And yeah, of course, somebody could, assuming this is garmi, somebody could be held liable for the damage that they cause. So I think the Nesivis is really making a chulent of these two different issues. He's conflating a liability of contract law with a liability of Nezikin and mixing them together. And in his answer, it's even worse. Even in posing the question that way, it's problematic. And then his answer is even worse, arguably, because he says, oh, yes, of course, the amount you could be socher alein umatan is going to be fixed by the amount you could collect under Nezikin. And I just think that's a huge chiddush, because he's conflating, really, these very different principles. Okay, let's take Gabe's hand, and then...
Yeah, when Gary and I discussed this, like, we sort of raised the problem issue you're raising on the Nesivos, but there's something, like reasonable about what the Nesivos is saying, that at the end of the day, even if the Nesivos are different between the two, it's only reasonable that we would cap that the max for what would be so clear on the Paulim would be the Nezek that you'd ultimately have to pay in the case of Hefsid. That's probably in the Paul's best interests also. Like, it just makes a lot of sense, even if it's hard to explain on a fundamental level. Now, we weren't sure what to do with that, because we'd like to explain things fundamentally, but it does feel...
You're saying it sounds reasonable, even though you have to find the exact rationale. Is that what you're saying, Gabe?
Yeah, do you disagree? Like that is the most intuitive cap for the Socher and Bishop Kassabson.
Right. Interesting. I'll tell you, let me pull back the Nesivis for a second. Oh, sorry, I have the wrong screen open right now. So, Gabe, I think that the Nesivis is thinking, right, that this is a case where the Nezek value is greater than the Socher Alein Umatan value, right? Is that how you understood the case also?
Yeah.
Right? So the workers will have to pay more to be socher alei numata, and if the nezek is worth more, right? I mean, that's definitely the case. That's how you understood it as well, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what do you? So you're trying to defend. You're saying that there's something reasonable about the nesivus' answer. Is that correct?
Yeah, meaning if the Baalbai can't find workers to fix this Devaravid issue crisis, and he's going to end up sort of charging the Polim the entire cost of the lost Pishtan, then the Polim would be interested or motivated to be so chayr lehin or to cover the cost of workers up until the cost of the Pishtan.
Yeah, you're saying just that's like the, it's in their best interest kind of thing. So that's an interesting point. Let me try to give a more conception. You're saying it's like an umdinar or something, that it's in their interest to just get it done the chatchila, the next post facto, right?
I know that won't make very many briskers happy.
Right. Well, I'll say here's a more lumdish way that you could put it, I think, is to say, well, let me put it this way. I guess the way to resist your argument is to say, well, you might say that there's always an uncertainty as to what damage will be sustained, and that uncertainty diminishes. So yes, maybe there's like a 70% chance that the loss will be $1,000. And so maybe the Polim would rather wait and take that 30% chance that the loss won't actually be sustained, instead of, you know, having to pay the expected liability up front to hire new Polim. Right, Gabe? So I think that's one way of resisting the umdina that you're suggesting. But let me give what I think is a more fundamental answer, a defense for the nesivus here. I think some of you pointed out in the past that maybe we could... Remember, we always go back to our case. I know Donnie brought it in a few times. Our case of Niske Mamon with the trespassing sheep, where sometimes even mitam nezikin, you have a right to take action to make sure that you're not going to suffer a loss. So I wonder if you could defend the nesivus here by saying that he's not mixing principles of contract liability with tort liability, but what he's doing is he's saying that if mitam nezek you could collect ex post facto this amount, then mitam nezek you could also collect this amount to avert suffering that kind of a loss. And maybe that's really what's going on here with the nesivus, that he's just viewing everything as being mitam nezek, and your ability to be socher alehen itself maybe doesn't flow from principles of contract of getting the performance fulfilled, but rather mitam averting a loss, which itself is a principle of nezek, and you could cap that value or assign the cap the liability at the amount of nezek that you would suffer b'di'evet. So it's really all internal to nezek considerations, not a mix.
So is he switching the emphasis to the worker? That, like, now we're looking out for the worker's potential nezek loss?
No, not, it's not the worker's potential nezek loss, but the Baal HaBayis has an ex-ante right to not be harmed, as opposed to just having an ex-post right to be compensated for loss. And then he's saying that we'll fix the value of how much he could charge the worker to protect his own ex-ante right not to be harmed at the value of what he would have suffered ex post facto if he were damaged. But then it's all, this whole nesivus consideration is, he's viewing the whole sugya from internal considerations of nezek, not cross sugya considerations of contract to nezek. It's a chiddush though, because then I'm not sure if the nesivus here would be saying that the whole sugya here is working with principles of nezikin, or he's saying, hey, if you... There in a chanami, there are two separate principles, but if you could also ex post facto collect mitam nezek, then we could transpose that ex ante also and allow you to be sochra alein mitam nezek.
Itamar?
Yeah.
So the problem with what I think what you're saying would be right for the nesivus, but it would raise a problem, which is that in the Gemaras and Bava Kama that deal with preemption of nezek, the Gemara is unanimous that you can only do as much as possible to as much as you need to do to avert the nezek, and if you go farther, you're actually chayev. So it would be a violation of those of the principles in those Gemaras. It carries over to an Isser v'Heter context also. Nice Yadik Shliach Bezdin.
Right, you're saying in the Avodah Nishtinah L'Nafshei, so I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So those sugyas are all very clear that, like, you can preempt, you have that right, you don't have to suffer the loss. And sometimes there's a principle in law sometimes that you, just as a matter of interest, like in American law, if you want to challenge the legality of a tax, you have to pay the tax even while you're challenging it in court.
Right.
So the halacha says you don't have to suffer the nezek, you can preempt the nezek, but the... I mean, you know, you could, this calculation doesn't really work when you're like stopping an ox from goring your cow. It actually does in the employment context.
Right.
But you can only do as much as you need to do to stop the nezek.
Right.
And that's not proportionate to the degree of loss you would suffer.
There's right. It would be a remarkable coincidence if this worked out just, you know, for the nesivas perfectly, that, oh, the amount it takes you to stop the loss is always going to be identical with the value of the loss.
So that would be a big kashi on this way of reading the nesivas.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a very interesting, it's a good point. We'd have to look more closely to see if these could align. Okay, let's take Donnie, do you have a hand up? I see you have a thumbs up. Does that mean you just liked it, or you're trying to raise a hand also?
No, that was like from when you, like, way earlier when you said thumbs up.
Okay, got it. Yoni,
how do you raise your hand on Zoom? Just like, so
if you go to participants, there's a function. Go to participants.
Yeah.
And there should be like a hand raise option. And then it'll flash on my screen. Yeah, there you go. It'll say that Cole raised his hand. Yeah, there you go. Okay, Yoni. Let's take Yoni and Adam.
Kind of two questions. Or first, I guess like a comment. I think that you could argue that the Nesivos is Lishitato in the sense that we saw earlier that he consistently sees most of the contract issues as Nezik issues.
Yeah.
We saw that with regards like the Hazar Zipalabai stuff.
That's a good. That's a nice point.
Secondly, just like a question, like a simple question on this figure. I don't really understand how the Nesivos could suggest that someone believes that there is like an uncapped amount that you could be Sokra land. Doesn't the Gemara explicitly say Sokra land out of today mem or nun?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of Rishonim we saw, and I think the Sma said this explicitly, and it was implicit in the Ramban. They thought that amount, the ad mem or nun, is lav dafka. That's just like the, you know, the usual amount that people pay to, you know, find workers in a crisis to avert a loss.
I have an academic Talmud question. Has anybody done some research into this, like, mem nun amount, like what it meant? Like, this seems to me a case where actual historical research would help us.
I mean, the Ramban just says that it was like the customary amount that people would pay to hire workers and when they were in a bind.
Okay.
So you see, we don't have to do academic Talmud. The Ramban did it for us in this case.
All right, thank God.
Yeah.
Why specify any amount though if it's going to be like whatever the nezek is?
Yeah,
he was exaggerating. You could pay him $1 million.
Exactly. It seems like mem nun. Remember, Rashi seemed to suggest that was like more than 10 times the value of the original contract. And, you know, it's just like a kind of empirical. It was an empirical, I guess, statistic that, you know, in a bind, you'd never end up paying more than, you know, 10 times the original contract to get it done. That's the, yeah, it's all these empirical assumptions, kinds that make Gabe unhappy. So, okay, Adam. Yoni, you have any more comments, or Yoni? Yoni, you're good.
Yeah, I'm good for now. Yeah.
Okay, good. Adam.
Okay, first, a comment. It sounds like a bit of a stretch. Since this whole thing, I mean, from your perspective, saying that he's looking at it through a lens of Nezek, to say that he's extending the din of, which is already Dina de Garmi, extending that to preemptive Dina de Garmi.
Yeah, it's a big Kiddush. Yeah, I agree.
This is a stretch.
This is consistent. This is consistent with Cole's point that we'd want to make sure that the preemptive right is consistent in this sugya is consistent with the preemptive rights in generally across Bava Kamma. And you're saying, well, if, you know, Dina de Garmi itself is such an open question about what you're allowed to do, what you're allowed to collect, it'd be a chiddush to say that there's a preemptive right to avert losses in Dina de Garmi, because it is, right?
Another point, it's it's sort of fascinating to look at the two different sides of how these cases could go down, in the sense that you could have a case where Nezek, the Nezek theory that caused the end of the case, is a lot less than the traditional amount of soap.
That's the question of Ruki Vager, right? What happens when the so this question of the Nesivis, this position of the Nesivis is really interested in what happens when the value of the Nezek is going to be much more than the cost of hiring new workers, which I assume is going to be most cases.
The question, what are the Rishonim generally concerned about? What's the case that they're talking about? Also, what's the case that the Gemara is talking about? When it mentions Medlamun, could be that's the case of where
it could Nezek's be. Much the Gemara doesn't really take a position on it. But this is a good question. This is a good way of transitioning to the next thing I wanted to take a look at. So the Nesivis is a case where the Nezek is going to be presumably much more than the cost of hiring new workers. Ricky Vager has a suffix about what happens when the Nezek is going to be less than the cost of hiring new workers. So it's a very interesting suffix that Ricky Vager has. So look here on the bottom of 67. I actually tried to track down this Ricky Vager. I couldn't find it inside. I don't know if anybody was able to locate it, but we have the quote here from the Pesach Choshen. So he tells us the following: "Chidusha Ricky Vager mistapik, b'hada sochar aleim b'davar ha'avod, kishahefsid eno magia l'shir k'deis scharan, kigon shashar pishdan shava dinar v'sachran b'beiz, sha'ayde malachta niya shava hei dinarim." It's interesting. The specifics of his case doesn't matter for us right now, but the idea is that the workers' labor would have improved the value of the pishtan, and that's why the Balabayas was willing to hire them for more than the loss that he would suffer. So for our purposes right now, what's important to say is that, let's say, the cost of the ex post facto Nezek, the value of the ex post facto Nezek is less than the cost of hiring new workers to avert the Nezek. So the question is, Mgam bezeh sochar alein ad kedei scharan? Oshe yecholim ha-poalim lomar anu neshalim lecha hefsid hadinor shehu kol hefsidcha velo neschayiv ad kedei kol scharenu. In the case where the value of the nezek would be less than the cost of hiring new workers, can the poalim argue, we don't want to be on the hook for the cost of hiring new workers, so we'll just pay your out-of-pocket losses that you would suffer from our not working, which is actually better for us, right? So let's just take concrete numbers. Let's say the loss that the Balabayas would suffer would be $100. The cost of hiring Poalim to avert the loss is $200. Okay, now why would that ever be rational for the Balabayas? We don't have to get into right now. But do the Poalim have the right to say, we'll just pay the $100 out-of-pocket loss rather than paying the $200 cost of averting, of hiring new Poalim? So what do you guys think? That's the question of Ricky Vager. So what do you think the answer is? So, anybody have thoughts on the answer? Adam?
Yeah. It seems to me, from my, the way I want to understand the sugya, is that, you know, it's the right of the Balabayas to say, I'd rather hire someone.
Yeah, excellent. Why do you think that is? Why do you think the Balabayas has that right?
And meaning, if you're doing that portion of the chiyuv in terms of the payments through contract theory, then the goal is that the Balabayas gets the job done.
100%. I think that's exactly right, Adam. Meaning, I think the argument here is based on our distinction between these different remedies, that there's one remedy is from the contract and where the primary obligation is to get the job done. That's what the Balabayas is entitled to. That's, he has a Hofeldian claim right against the Poel to get the job done. The Poel has a duty to get the job done, and the Balabayas could enforce that. What happens, in this background or in this more removed world where, we can't perform on the contract, then we have to start considering secondary remedies and ex post facto, what is he entitled to? But the worker doesn't have a right to say, let's just skip to the backup remedy and not hold me liable for the primary remedy. No, the contract says that he's obligated to get the job done. That's his primary obligation. And so he's not allowed to just fast forward to the bidyeved remedies. I think that's exactly right. So I see Yakir or Ami has a hand. I'm not sure if it's Yakir's hand or Ami's hand, but we'll take their joint ha'ara. I guess it was Ami's hand.
Yeah. it's my turn. focused on them. The counterpoint, I guess, there are maybe a couple different ways to take this, but it could be that the value of the work past the amount that the Nezek is no longer a Davar Aved. Like that, the work, the extra value is now Davar She'eino Aved.
It's interesting. It's like a nice, it's an interesting way of thinking about this. Meaning that you know, for some reason you just want to define Davar Aved based off the actual losses. Is that the idea, Yakir?
What'd you say? Repeat the end of the sentence?
Oh, you're saying that maybe for some reason we should define Davar Ha'avod by the out-of-pocket losses.
Meaning, if you think about it, practically, the Baal HaBayis is not losing out if he's compensated for the out-of-pocket losses and then buys new Pishtan and gets the job done later.
Yeah, it's interesting. Except that I would say that there could be cases where the monetary loss wouldn't capture the, you know, kind of the non-monetary cost of not having the job completed. I mean, so think, for example, right? So I think the Piskei Choshen here in trying to decide this suffix is right to point us to v'lechora hayanira delo gara midavar ha'avot she'eno b'mamon she'sochar alein ad kedei scharan harei she'shir zeh eino tali b'shir hefzer ha'mamon. He's saying, look, the Mishnah gave us the case of hiring the band for the wedding or the musicians for the funeral. There's no out-of-pocket loss. There's no real monetary hefzid for their non-performance. But there is, you know, other kind of hefzid. So there, like, the monetary loss is zero. Like, the nezek is zero. But the cost of, you know, the kind of the not having it completed has some non-monetary value to the Baal HaBayis. And he's still able to be socher aleinu matan for some amount, which is presumably greater than the ex post facto nezek amount. And so he thinks that's
right, but it's just not clear if that aspect exists in every case of Davar Aved.
That's right.
Can you have a Davar Aved that's purely Davar Aved Shel Mamon and has no other
right. So let me say what I think. I see Yoni has a hand. We'll take Yoni's hand in just 1 second. I think what the Piskei Choshen is getting at is a little bit like what Adam answered. I mean, you see from the case of Davar Ha'avod She'eino Shel Mamon that the Poel's primary obligation is to get the job done, really as distinct from the cost of the Nezek. And then the Piskei Choshen here says, Ela she'efshar lechalik tadavka hasam she'kol ha'ibud eino b'mamon ve'eino nitan l'shir ve'lechein kavu chazal shir zeh. It's interesting. It sounds like he's saying that maybe it's only in a case of Davar Ha'avod She'eino Shel Mamon Legamri, then Chazal came up with this way of almost like assessing the Nezek purely in terms of getting the job done. Aval kisha hefsed hu b'mamon, ein ha'poalim chayavim b'yoser me hefsed mamish. Whenever there's hefsed mamon, then the liability of the poalim would exclusively be capped at the value of the out-of-pocket losses of the Nezek. So what I think is going on here in the suggestion of the Piskei Choshen, unless you want to share your thoughts on the Piskei Choshen first, or what I think is going on here is that the Piskei Choshen is thinking, maybe, like the Nesivis, we could view all of the liability here really as being mitam Nezek, and then whenever there is out-of-pocket loss in the end of the day, the liability is going to be capped at the amount of the Nezek. The only time Chazal start talking about Socher Aleinu Matan is when there's no monetary Nezek to be evaluated. So Chazal imposed the value of the Nezek at the cost of completion. But when there is Nezek, then Nezek is going to define the scope of the remedy. So I think, again, the Piskei Choshen is failing to distinguish, like the Nesivis, between the remedies that arise under a theory of contract, where the primary duty is to get the job done, and remedies that arise under a theory of Nezek. He's he's viewing everything here in terms of a theory of Nezek, and that's why liability will be capped at the ex post Tashlume Nezikin. And he thinks that the case of Hefzid She'eino Shel Mamon is just like some exception where Chazal impose an arbitrary Nezek value at the cost of completion. Okay, Yoni has a hand here.
Not a capping.
Yeah, capping in this case.
Why would it be a capping? How could it be higher?
What's that?
How could it be higher than that? Why is that a cap?
Or they're fixing the amount at. Is that a better way of putting it?
No, I didn't mean to quibble with you. Are you saying that that's a ceiling? It strikes me that that's the most they could possibly pay.
In which case? In the Hefzid Shel Mamon case or the Hefzid She'eino Shel Mamon case?
Hefzid Shel Mamon case.
Right, in the Hefzid Shel Mamon case, so he's saying within a Ricky Vager scenario where the out-of-pocket loss is going to be less than the cost of completion. The Tashlume Nezikin is less.
Sorry, I see what you're saying.
Okay, right,
sorry.
So he wants to say that the primary, what I'm calling the primary duties of the contract can never impose a greater cost, a greater liability than just the actual out-of-pocket Nezek.
I see.
And I think that's because of
which makes... Which makes sense.
If you're thinking at all in terms of Nezikin, right?
I think in any case, it probably makes sense.
Right, well, I guess
you could agree to that in principle, but it strikes me that there are contract reasons why, because we don't want to, from a Knas perspective, fine, never mind. Okay, right. Fine.
So I think we have Yoni had a hand up for a while. Yoni, are you here? And Yair has a hand, so I'll take Yoni and Yair.
Yeah, I agree with your read. I think that even according to the Sivos approach, you could have suggested without this Kavu Chazal Shirze, you could just say that everything is Nezikin based. So you kind of can choose the lower of the Nezek.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
Also, I found the Rabbi Kiva Eger, just a heads up.
Oh, yeah? Is it on our Sugya?
If it goes with Kiva Eger, it's got some Vav.
Oh, it's on the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So I'll add it to the source sheet then. Okay, I was looking on the Chidush of Kivyeger and Arsugya. I didn't realize it was on the Hagol Shulchan Aruch. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
He doesn't really say anything other than what the Pesachim quotes.
Okay, and he leaves it Pesachic, right? He doesn't give his own answer.
Yeah, he just asked the question.
Okay, good. Excellent. I'm just going to make a note here to add it on the source sheet. Excellent. Okay, thank you. Yair.
For my own clarity, it seems like the Pitzchei Choshen's initial Hava, not even a Hava Mina, his initial Svara, that if you're in a Chayiv in a case of Dabar Avod, when there's no actual Hefzid Mamon, and he uses this phrase, Harish Shir Zeh Eino Tali B'Shir Hefzid Mamon, that could very well be contract liability. And it's only within his Efshel Achalek that he really subsumes everything within the context of the Zeh.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that is right. So you're saying it's not like he's committed to the Efshel Achalek. It's really just he's going back and forth routine. He agrees to my read under, if we maintain this distinction between contract liability and Nezek liability, he's saying, oh, but there's also a theory, there's also a way of reading this all in terms of Nezek, in which case the last sentence.
Yeah,
I think I agree with that reading in the Pesachei Choshen. I'm just taking an issue with his Efshar Lechalik. But yes, yeah, excellent. That's good. Okay, we have Yakir back. Yakir, hand?
No, hand, sorry.
Okay, it was an old hand. Okay, sorry. So let me see if anybody else has a hand. Okay, good. Excellent. So let's go on here to our next section. Yes. So I'll just want to reiterate something that I mentioned at the beginning of the Chavura, and this also takes a stand on the relationship between these different remedies. So notice the Chazon Ish says, and this is really similar to what we saw in the Ritva, says that afilu behefsid mamon ein apolim chayavin el kishir shekavul chazal, that even in a case where there are out-of-pocket losses for the Poalim's non-performance, their Nezek liability is going to be capped at the value of their contract, or, in the Demei Chavila case, at the reasonable amount of whatever mem or nun zuz, whatever it's customary to hire workers at. And this is similar to what we saw in the Ritva. If we go back earlier, the Ritva said that in Davar ha'avod shel mamon, they're going to be chayiv ad kedei scharan. And so I think this is the exact opposite of the Nesivis. The Nesivis was arguing that the ex post facto nezek amount will fix the ex ante socher alehen amount. The Chazon Ish and the Ritva are arguing that the socher alei, the ex ante socher alehen amount is going to fix the ultimate liability of ex post facto nezek amount. So all what's interesting here is that all these achronim, I think, are kind of conflating these different principles. I guess they all see that like all liability here is like under one theory, and therefore they think there's no in principle basis to distinguish between the amounts lechatchila of socher alein and the amounts bidyeved. They all just go in different directions. For the Chazon Ish and the Ritva, the idea is, I guess, that all liability here is just under the theory of contract, and then you can never be chayiv mitam, you know, real nezek more than that. For the Nesivis and that other Pesachei Choshen, that seems to go the other way. Maybe all liability here is really mitam nezek, and even ex ante, you'll be chayiv for that same amount. So these are real like parallel opposite shitos here. Anybody have comments on just that relationship between these shitos? No. Yeah, I think it's actually quite straightforward. But again, my view would be to distinguish conceptually between them and say that no, the amount of ex post facto nezek is totally distinct from the amount of socher alehen. Eitan.
Yeah, couldn't you? I guess this is maybe more of an academic point, but couldn't you just say that given the context that we're talking about contract law, what the Chazon Ish and the Ritva are proposing makes more sense with what we're trying to say because we're dealing with contract law?
Maybe, but I don't see why just because like the fact that we're also talking about contract law should preclude there from being also liability mitam nezek under Garmi. Right?
Right. My point is that if the nezek arrives, it's still under like
yeah,
the
correct. That, correct. That's correct. That's exactly what they're... That's how you'd explain their view. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, good point. Yakir.
Does he really have to go so far as to say that the Chazon Ish is really conflating the two bases for payments? Couldn't you develop some sort of other mahalach, something along the lines of, since the Baal Bayis had the ability to be Sochar Lehen and he passed up, so the amount of the Nezek is now redefined by his new Pshia or something like that?
Yeah, you'd have to say that it's limited to a case where the Baal Bayis was Poshea and didn't hire. But there's no evidence that our sugya would be limited to that. So it sounds like, right, it sounds like the Chazon Ish would say in all circumstances his liability is going to be capped at this amount.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you want to make it under those kinds of ukimtos, you don't have to say the Chazon Ish is conflating them. But I just think based off like the straightforward reading of the sugya, it sounds like he is. Yeah. Yoni.
Is it possible the Chazon Ish is making like a Nezikin argument? So like even within Nezikin, you can somehow cap responsibility based on like how much you are, you know, involved in it. Like we saw, I mean, we did see like in Nezikin, there's certain, like Chazal has certain, you know, input within economic considerations, within, you know, proper societal functioning, how much you're responsible is going to be, you know, it's going to depend a little bit on how much you're involved.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. Meaning you're saying, yeah, sure, I'm a mazik, but my like contribution here is, you know, capped at the, you know, the value of my contract for some external consideration, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea. I'd have to look more into that question and maybe get a closer look at the Chazon Ish's language here. But yeah, that's a really interesting suggestion. We should look more into that. I'll take a close look at this Chazon Ish and then we'll see if there's anything in his language that suggests something to that extent. Yeah, it's a good point.
Could that preserve your like Nezikin, like this thing Nezek, not a contract?
That's right. That's right. You might say, oh, even just under the pure principles of Nezek, maybe there's some ground here to think that, you know, if he was only going to make this amount from the interaction, it's not right to hold him liable for more than that. Something along those lines. But yeah. Okay. Let me make another ha'ara about the relationship between the Nezek liability and the contract liability. Give me, in 20 minutes, I'll do it for you, okay? Okay. So the Pisrei Choshen has a nice diuk here in the from Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So let's go back to Rabbi Akiva Eiger's case for a second. Rabbi Akiva Eiger's suffik was in a case where the socher alehen amount would be greater than the hefzid. So what was his example? So you have flax that's worth, let's say, just $1 that's soaking. You hire Poalim for $2 to harvest it. And al yidei melachta niya shaveh hei dinarim. Like through the labor that the flax harvesters are going to invest, the flax will be worth $5. Okay, so right now the flax is worth $1. It'll appreciate to $5 after it's harvested, and you're hiring workers for $2. So the structure that Rabbi Akiva Eiger has in mind is that your real hefzid is just going to be $1, right? If the flax gets destroyed, it's a $1 real loss. The minyas harevach, however, is that you're going to lose altogether $5 if it's not performed, because you're losing the revach of what you could have made off the flax if it was harvested. And your costs for the labor are $2. So, and remember, Akiva Eiger wanted to know, in this kind of a case where the actual, where the hefzid is less than the socher alehen, do the poalim have the right to say, I will just pay your hefzid amount? So the Pisrei Choshen has a nice diuk here. He says, "Mashma midivrei Rabbi Akiva Eiger sheminias harevach eino bechlal davar ha'avod." You see that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is assuming that the lost profits, right? So the $4 difference in appreciation that the flax would have appreciated had the labor been performed, is not bechlal davar ha'avod. The imlo kein typically shechayav anapol mishem shal yadan hayamochra pishan behe dinarim. Right, because if the minyas harevach was included in the hefzid amount, then the hefzid liability would really be $5, and it would be greater than the socher alehen amount, which is $2. From the fact that Rabbi Akiva Eiger thinks the hefzid amount here is only $1, and the socher alehen amount is $2, that shows that Rabbi Akiva Eiger thinks that the minyas harevach difference is not recoverable under the nezek of davar ha'avod. I think that's a fair diuk in Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Everybody agree with that diuk that he's making? I think he's right. Guys, anybody? Yeah? Donnie, I see you're nodding your head. Donnie, we don't hear you, but...
Yeah, I know. I think it makes sense. I'm rereading it right now. Just
to make sure. Yair, you think it's a good diuk?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good diuk. So look what he says. Yakir raised a hand. Yakir, go for it.
I think my point from earlier still argues against this diuk as well, that even if Minyas Harevach might in general, you know, be considered davar aved, in this type of case, it wouldn't be, because there's no urgency to the pish, to selling the pishta now, and you could always take your one zuz that the pishta was worth, buy a new pishta next week, and then make your ravach next week.
Yeah.
So the minyas ravach in this case is factually not davar ha'avid. That minyas ravach can never be davar.
That's a really interesting point, Yakir. Meaning you're saying that when we conceptualize davar ha'avod, meaning it's only the actual davar ha'avod component, which is davar ha'avod, right?
Right.
It's an interesting point. I wonder, though, however, Yakir, suppose like the markets for flax are only open today, and they're not going to be open until next year, in which case you could just shoehorn in the idea that even the revach part is davar ha'avod in this case.
And then I might say in Afinami that Rabbi Akiva Eiger would then agree that
it is davar ha'avod. Yeah, but you're saying this is a good way of just bringing out the distinction between where one component of it is davar ha'avod, but not all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So look what the Chazon Ish here says. V'Chazon Ish kasav shel inyan socher alehen with respect to having the right to hire new workers, vaday shemenias harevach bichlal davar ha'avod. So, of course, if you're going to lose a profit, right, so you're going to lose the ability to make money off this, then menias harevach will for sure constitute a davar ha'avod. And, you know, the haraya, even the chasana, where you're not losing any money from not having a band perform, if that's considered a davar ha'avod, and the idea is that also not being able to make a profit also constitutes a form of davar ha'avod. So in terms of whether is this a davar ha'avod, the Chazon Ish wants to say that menias harevach itself is sufficient to constitute davar ha'avod. It doesn't have to be a financial loss. Okay? Ela, shemistapik ha'Chazon Ish. And so in terms of triggering the right to be socher alehen, for sure, menias harevach is sufficient to trigger the right to be socher alehen. Elashem is stopping a chazan ish le'inyan chiv apol l'shalim hefzed, and menias harevach hefzed hu. So here's a really interesting distinction, right? What counts with respect to the primary duty of performance will be different from what counts with respect to the ex post facto ability to collect for nezek. So menias harevach, the Chazon Ish is pointing out here, is an in-between case. Menias harevach is sufficient to generate liability under a theory of contract, and that's why the poel will be chayiv to cover the costs of completion of socher alehen for even menias harevach considerations. But it's not enough to trigger ex post facto nezek for tashlumei nezikin. So I think this Chazon Ish's distinction, where he's mesupik about one but confident about the other, is just another nice way of bringing out the distinction between what falls under the primary remedies and our scope of what constitutes davar ha'aved for the primary remedies will be broader than the scope of things that will be recoverable ex post facto under a theory of nezek. So this Chazon Ish is a nice way of bringing out that distinction. Any comments on that Chazon Ish discussion? Menias harevach? Eitan, you're good? Yoni, you're good? Yair, you're good?
I'm thinking about whether there's a difference between counting in terms of triggering liability as opposed to counting in terms of being part of the calculation of liability, but I don't think so.
I see what you're getting at. But more or less, you're good with my distinction.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Ben, Charleston? We're good. Noah?
I've been having some issues with my computer, so I'm like half with you, half not.
Okay. Sounds like the half not with us is greater than the half with us.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Adam, you're good?
Fantastic.
Okay. Donnie? Cole, you're okay there? We see you're pacing like a caged lion.
That's Lishi Tussi. I'm actually making dinner at the moment.
Excellent. So you guys, look what you could do when we have Zoom Chabura and you can't do while we're in person.
No, multi-tap. We are 20th century Lamdanim.
That's right. I'm getting a tan 21st, while I'm doing the Chabura also, you know?
Tan. Yeah. Thank God.
Okay. Good. Let me... Yeah. I'm going to add one other interesting discussion in here. But that really concludes what I wanted to discuss under these distinctions between the nezek tashlumei nezikin and the duty to complete the contract. So let's move on now to a related discussion. So this discussion is related in terms of teasing out these distinctions between the primary remedies and secondary remedies in the contract, but from a different perspective. The perspective here is about is with respect to comparing the liabilities that a poel has to a balabayas in a case of breach, and the liabilities that a balabayas has to a poel in his case, is a breach. Right. So throughout the semester, earlier in the semester, we spoke about Chazar de Baal HaBayis. We spent a long time now discussing Chazar de Poel. But what we'll see now is that some Achronim think there's a salient distinction between the remedies in their breaches. And Yoni was excited about this in the last Chabura. So we're going to get to it now. What a lot of Achronim zero in on is that they think that Rishonim are more amenable to there being Tashlumei Nezikin for a case where the Baal HaBayis breaches, which causes the Poel to lose employment for the day, than for cases where the Poel breaches, which causes the Baal HaBayis a monetary loss, like in the Flax case where he just has to suffer the spoilage of his goods. So you recall that Tosfos on Ayin Vav Amud Beis, and this is what these Achronim point to, defended the view that if a Baal HaBayis tells a Poel, come to my house, I'll give you a job, you could paint my living room, and the Poel, relying on that inducement, leaves the marketplace. He travels to the Baal HaBayis' house. He says, I'm ready to paint. The Baal HaBayis then says, oh, I don't need you anymore. And the Baal HaBayis cancels. So if the Poel can't find alternative employment anymore, it's too late for him to go back to the marketplace. Tosfos says the Baal HaBayis is chayiv to pay out what the Poel would have made. Mitam dina degarmi. The Baal HaBayis was mazik the Poel by depriving him of an alternative employment opportunity through his inducement and promise to give him labor at his own house. So Tosfos's view in Ayin Vav Amud Beis is that Chazara de Baal HaBayis and could trigger liability mitam dina degarmi. The Ramban and the Muki Yosef in our sugya said that in a case where the Poel backs out in a Davar HaAved, it will not trigger ex post facto liability mitam nezek. Right? Sure, the Hagos Ashri disagreed, but just within the Shita of the Ramban and the Muki Yosef, they thought that the Poel's breach will not trigger ex post facto damages. So what a lot of Achronim point out here is there seems to be an asymmetry between the Baal HaBayis' liability to the Poel, where he is chayiv for the nezikin that he causes the Poel to suffer, and the Poel's liability, where according to the Ramban and Muki Yosef, the Poel is not liable for the nezikin that he imposes on the Baal HaBayis. So why is there this asymmetry? That's the concern of, we'll see, the Machane Ephraim and the Ketzos, and they all have something to say about this. Okay, does anybody have any questions just about the fact of the asymmetry as observed by these Achronim? Okay, looks like everybody... Ben?
I just think it's interesting that if we talked about primary and sort of secondary duties when it came to the workers backing out, that there is discussion, we discussed before, but there's less discussion about primary and secondary duties when it comes to the Baal's relationship to the Poel, meaning like, if you wanted to parallel the two, perhaps you would say, just like it's the Poel's responsibility to make sure the job is done in some way, either by them doing it or by other people doing it, so too, it's the Baal's responsibility to make sure the Poel and have work to do. Meaning, rather than just automatically jumping to this to the remedy of payment, you should jump to the remedy of, it's the responsibility to find employment.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's a nice way of putting it, Ben. Good. So I think there are two ways to take what you're saying. One way to take it is to say that there's going to be a difference between the kinds of primary duties that the Baal HaBayis has to the Poel than the kinds of primary duties that the Poel has towards the Baal HaBayis, which we'll see in the Ketzos in a minute. The other way of taking your comment is to say, well, maybe we shouldn't, when we consider what the Baal HaBayis' primary remedy to the Poel is, we shouldn't jump to payment. We should also consider finding him alternative employment, right?
Sure.
Okay, good. So hold off on that point. I think the first point is exactly what the Ketzos is going to say. So we're going to come back to that in a minute. But yeah, it's a really, really good point, Ben. Eitan, did you also have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say that we've spent a lot of time over the year discussing like the rights of the worker with regards to contracts, and specifically when the owner backs out. So like, the whole idea that there's a problem with the asymmetry here, I don't really understand that, when we've spent so much time building up this notion that the the worker himself has certain freedoms or rights
that the Bala Bais doesn't have. Well, I would say the quick answer to that is that within Davar HaAved, in a case of Davar HaAved, the worker doesn't seem to have any more rights than the Bala Bais has. So at least within that context, we shouldn't expect to see any benefits for the worker than, you know, more so than the Bala Bais would have. Okay? So here's what the Achronim say to address this asymmetry. The Machane Ephraim in Skiris Polim Simin Vav says... it's interesting. He says that the reason for this discrepancy is Mishum Delo Have, when it comes to the Bala Bais. When it comes to the Poalim causing a loss to the Bala Bais, like in the Flax case, the Ramban and the Nemuka Yosef say there's no Tashchi of Nezikin. Mishum delo havi ala grama bin azikin. Their causal relationship to the loss of the flax is too far removed. Ubala bayis chayiv, hoil the kibel ale l'shalem. Masha enkein bepoalim shelo kiblu aleim l'shalem. So it sounds like the Machane Ephraim, he doesn't flesh it out in any greater length, but he says that, yes, in both cases it's a kind of a grama. And in principle, both people should be pater. So the nezek is too far removed from the primary obligations of the contract. But the difference is that the Bala Bais already was mekabel alei l'shalem. Like he had accepted to pay the workers. And so for some reason that's going to help trigger his liability. The workers had never accepted upon themselves to pay the Bala Bais anything. So it's harder to trigger a liability from their side, because there really never is a chiyuv l'shalem from the poel to Bala Bais. Whereas since the Bala Bais had accepted at least to pay the workers for the job that they would do, it seems like it's easier to also hold him liable mitam nezek. I think it's a very opaque distinction. It's not clear what he means. It's not clear why a schaivus to pay the salary of the contract should make the Bala Bais liable for nezek if they're really two separate chiyuvim. But the Machane Ephraim somehow thinks that this is relevant to understanding the asymmetry. Eitan?
Yeah, I would also say that this is moving away from the idea that it's like task-oriented or finishing the job, and much more so on like the monetary arrangement between the two parties.
Yeah, so it seems like just like his chayvus, you know, it's like his chayvus mamon is something that would bear on the asymmetry. Yeah, I agree. The Machane Ephraim in Schiris Polim Simen Zayin, this is the next Simen, so the one I just read you is Simen Vav. In Simen Zayin, he also comes back to this asymmetry. Here he gives what seems to be a slightly different answer. He says, the distinction is that the Bala Bais backing out is more of a kind of garmi, whereas the Poel's backing out is grama. So let's put it a little differently. The relationship between the Hefsin Mamon that the Bala Bais suffers from the Poel's breach is different from the Hefsin Mamon that the Poel suffers from the Bala Bais' breach. So he says, Mitoch de Ramban near the Chazoras Poelim lo mikri dina de garmi l'chayvin hu b'chol ma'ashe Hefsin Bala Bais el grama ben azikin chashiv. So the Poel's breach is considered grama. Velodami lechazaras Bala Bais shekasva tosvos, blah blah blah, the chashiv dina the garmi. So why is one grama? Why is the Poel's breach grama, and the Bala Bais's breach garmi? So he says, kivan shal yado nisbatlu oso hayom, vahezek nasa miyado, shal pidi buro lo nisker b'makam acher, v'chashiv kiilu sagaras chaver b'cheder, v'lo hinichu lasos malacha. It sounds like he thinks that the Bala Bais' breach is considered garmi with respect to the Poel's loss, because for some reason, the Bala Bais' breach is considered kilu chashiv as kilu sagar as chaveru becheder, below hinicho lasos malacha. I think what he means is that it's as if it's an offense directed directly at the Poel's person. Like you prevented him from working. And so the causal relationship is direct between the Bala Bais' person and the Poel's person.
That's like Shevet Shalom Makom Nezek language.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly the language of Shevet Shalom Makom Nezek. Aval b'chazaras poelim eina hezek nasim yada la'achar kach v'hava gram v'nezikin. He's thinking that the poel's breach with respect to the Baal HaBayis' property is a little more removed. So it's like, yeah, I didn't show up. That caused your flax to get destroyed. That causes you a loss. For some reason, he thinks that's more removed than the way the Baal HaBayis harms the poel in his breach. I'm not persuaded.
Like a little bit of a rabbit hole, don't you think, Itamar?
Yes.
Like, what? These Nezek intuitions in Bava Kamma are basically based on, like, you know, like back of the envelope physics intuitions.
Yeah, sometimes it does seem that way, and this seems to be one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not so persuaded by this distinction of the Machane Ephraim. So I think the Machane Ephraim here is like two ways of trying to address the asymmetry. In Simon Vav, he says that it's based on the idea of the Baal HaBayis is mischayev himself mamon, and that's why it's easier to trigger his liability. In Simon Zion, the Machane Ephraim says that it's because the poel is more directly harmed by the Baal HaBayis, like Shevet, Tzkilu Sagar, Eschaveir, Velohi Nichol Asos Melacha. But in the case of the Chazar de Poelim, it's more indirect. And that's why there's no Teshlomei Nezikin liability. So these are interesting distinctions, but they don't really bear so much on helping our distinction between primary and secondary duties. Both of these distinctions, one of them seems to be mitam is chayvos, and the other one seems to be just internal to principles of Nezikin. What's important for our purposes is the Ktsos and Shimon Shinlam and Gimel Gimel, who's also addressing this question, but he gives a different answer to address the asymmetry. So let me discuss the Ktsos, and I'll take some questions. Ben, you have a hand? I'll take your hand quickly.
Sure, if you want, we can wait till after. But I was wondering if you could, again, you said not to really stress on it, but I've always been a little confused as to the difference between Garmi and Grama. So if you want to touch on that for a second.
Yeah, let's hold off on that. Just for our purposes now, you know, Garmi is going to be more direct and Grama is more indirect. And the idea is that the Baal HaBayis' harm that he imposes on the Poelim is more direct than the harm that the Poelim imposed on the Baal HaBayis. For our purposes now. But yeah, we could talk more about Grama and Garmi a little later. Yair, you have a hand now, or you want to hold off a little bit?
We're getting feedback, guys.
Yeah, let me see who it is. I'll mute all, and then only the person who's talking should unmute themselves. Okay.
All right, so now everyone will know if it's me. I don't think it is. I'm not sure a plausible argument can be made that in Simon Vav, the Machane Ephraim is appealing to some notion of primary duties or secondary duties, or at least the difference between different kinds of liabilities.
Yeah, I agree.
You're not Chayav Mitam Nezek. Are you Chayav Mitam some kind of Hischayavus? Well, the Baal HaBayis was, because when he hired him, he said, oh, I'm going to pay your wages.
Right.
Whereas when the Poel hired himself out, he didn't say, I'm going to pay for damages. He said, I'm going to do the job.
Right. I agree that you could read it that way. I mean, there's a way of reading into Simon Vav that distinction, but I would just say that it's very underdeveloped in the language of the Machane Ephraim, right? All he says is that in one case the Baal HaBayis is kibbal alei l'shalim and the Poel hasn't. So it could be that that's what he's getting at, that's the direction that he's pointing, but it's definitely underdeveloped in the language of the Machane Ephraim, right? Yair?
Yeah, there's reading in going on.
Correct. But I definitely agree that you could read this distinction into him. In the Ktsos, I think we got a really beautiful distinction and a nice solution to this prima facie asymmetry. So the Ktsos asks this question, and he says, here's the reason why we find this discrepancy. Hi, Noam. You want to come say hi to everybody quickly? Okay, we're going to be done in a few minutes. Come say hi. Cole wanted to say hi to you. Noam's coming.
Noam, what's up, kid?
Here's guys. Noam wants to say hi for a second. His hands are very dirty. You want to say hi to everybody? Here, I'll make the screen bigger. So everybody, you can say hi. Who do you see? Let's make this bigger. You see Cole? See everybody? Here we got Cole. Here we have Adam. Here we have Eitan Hain. Here we have Yair. He's floating in midair. Here's Gabe. Here's Donnie.
Your kids really do look like they're related
Here's
to each
Yoni.
Other.
Here's Yoni. Here's Yakir.
Hello.
Here's Ben. You know where Ben is? Ben's in Charleston with dolphins. And here's Noah. See, Noah's wearing a nice pair of tzitzis. Yeah? You want to say hi to everybody? Okay, say goodbye. Go inside. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Where were we? just kidding. So the Xos gives us So the Xos gives us a really nice answer to this asymmetry, and with this we'll conclude for today. He asks, why is it that in a Davar HaAvod, where the Poelim breach, the Baal HaBayis' sole remedy is to be Socher Leinu Matan, but at least according to the Ramban, there's no remedy of Tashlum and Ezekin. Whereas when the Poel backs out, the Baal HaBayis seems to... whereas when the Baal HaBayis backs out, the Baal HaBayis seems to be chayiv to pay the Poelim for their losses. Right? So here's what he says. Amnam Nira, the time of the Poelim Shechazru Baal HaBayis Lesa B'Tashlumin... The reason why the workers are not liable for tashlumen is Hainu Mishim de Poalim lo kiblu alehem ela ligmar hamelacha v'nishtabdu ligmar melachtan ad kedei scharan. The real obligation that the Poalim have, what they accept under the contract, is ligmar as hamelacha, and v'nishtabdu, their duty is to complete that melacha. Okay? And therefore... that duty translates into a socher alehen ad kedei scharan, aval im eino socher alehen lo bai shlume, kiven de lo kiblu alehen tashlumen. There's nothing in their contract that really makes them primarily obligated to pay tashlumen. Their contract is about them getting the job done. Aval bal habayis achozer bepoalim, ikar chiyuvo de bal habayis hu lishlume lepoalim. I think this is a variation on what Ben was saying. The primary duty that a Baal HaBayis has to the Poelim is to pay them their salary. The kivan de tno de Baal HaBayis hu lishlume, misham hachi bedavar avid tzarech lekayim tno bo lishlume. Since his primary duty is to pay, so in a case of breach, his liability will be to pay. So the Ktzos here has this really brilliant solution. What he's saying is that while on the face of it, if we look at this all just mitam nezek, there appears to be an asymmetry. Nezek is not the proper way to look at, it's not the proper lens through which to view the sugya. If we look at the sugya through principles of the primary duties of a contract, you'll see that the relationship is perfectly symmetrical. The primary duty of the poel is to complete the job, and that's why his liability is primarily in terms of absorbing the costs of getting new workers to complete the job. But the Baal HaBayis' primary duty is to pay the Poalim their salary. And that's why in a case of breach, he's going to have to pay out that salary. In the same way that in a case of breach, the Poalim have to satisfy their primary duty, which is to finish the job, and that's why they absorb the cost of the new workers. Baal HaBayis bepoalim shehu lehepich the ikar tano l'shlume, imkain b'davar ha'avar bai shlume. He also, the Baal HaBayis, and when he breaches, has to uphold his primary duties, which are to pay. So I think the Ktzos really brilliantly tells us that the symmetry is preserved when we think about it in terms of the liability latching on to the primary obligations of the contract. Because I think that's a really, really great Ktzos to wrap up with. Anybody have thoughts on the Ktzos? I have thoughts on the Ktzos. It's a really, really nice Ktzos, right?
Seems to be true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a sharp Ktzos. Yeah, Kira, you like the Ktzos?
Very sharp.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very stark and very sharp also. Right? I think this is like on the Madriga of the Avnei Nezer reading, but here the Ktzos does all the work for us. But I think it's just like a beautiful way to see a lot of the Achronim aren't sensitive to this distinction. Like the Nesivis wasn't sensitive to it. You saw the Pisrei Choshen and the Chazanish maybe weren't sensitive to it. But I think this distinction comes out really nicely in the Ktzos. And Yoni, this is what you were pointing us towards in the last Chabura, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great Ktzos, right?
Yeah, it's really...
What's amazing is that, like, this is never, you know, it's never quite fair to do that, to say this sort of thing, but it's amazing it took until the Ktzos to... In other words, there were 1,000 years of thinking about this in, you know, either purely in terms of like Baba Kama concepts or fundamentally like, you know, under the influence of Baba Kama concepts before the Ktzos realized that if you only would dispense with it, it's like they paid too much attention when they heard shir on Baba Kama that they, you know, they couldn't.
They colored their Baba Metzia.
They were anxious of influence. No, it really, it does matter the order that you learn these things in. Like, it's remarkable it took that long.
All right, yeshar koach, everybody. You'll see we're going to have on Thursday, so I'm going to spend like 3 minutes talking about one final ha'ara that I want to make on the relationship between Socher Alein and Matan, also on this primary secondary remedies distinction, but back just on the relationship between Socher Alein and Matan. And then we're going to start this question of contracts that are terminated because of force majeure, because of ones, in a pandemic, a makas medina, who gets to still collect on the contract. And we're going to try to solve Yair's issue with his contract with MTA.
Itamar, can I ask a housekeeping question quickly?
Yeah, let me just make sure everybody else is good here, and I'm going to stop the recording. Everybody else good on this?
I have been paid. It's been resolved.
Oh, it's been resolved?
I don't know what it was, but I got my check normally.
So. Wow. It could be that they're paying you for the days before March.
They didn't want Itamar to take them to Bez.
That's right.
Itamar is Bez.
Probably just wildly incompetence.
Yeah, it's probably a mistake. You know, they couldn't coordinate between their different departments.
It's a clerical error.
Yeah, that's great.
My stepfather told me when I got into Yale.
All right, yeshar koach, everybody. I'm going to stay on the line for a minute because Cole has a quick question. But we'll pick up on Thursday with that question. Yeshar koach.
The
recording has stopped.
Okay. What's the